Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, the Friday podcast all about your Kindle. I'm Len Edgerly, and this is episode 76 for Friday, January 1, 2010. Well, Happy New Year from downtown Denver, where we are settling in after our migration westward this week after a long stay in Cambridge, Mass. I'm recording on Thursday so we can enjoy the fireworks outside our window here downtown. And also, this will make the podcast available for listening early on the first day of the new year. The setting here is a little different than in Cambridge, where my studio has a lot more echo and not as many books there. But here, the sound, I think, is going to be okay because I've got a whole wall of mainly poetry books here in my studio in Denver. And so I'm glad to be out of the closet that I have to use off the bedroom in Cambridge, and a little better setup here for actually recording the podcast. On Monday night before we left Cambridge on Tuesday morning, I interviewed Darlene and her sister Deborah. Darlene's my wife. Deb was visiting us from Omaha, and I talked to them about a topic which may be of interest to you if you are a new Kindle owner. They have been sharing a single Amazon account, Darlene and Deb, which has made it possible for them to share Kindle books. Here in Denver today, I added comments from the third person sharing Darlene's Kindle account. That's our friend Tom, who's visiting with his wife Tish from Casper, Wyoming. In news this week, Amazon's recent spate of numbers-free press releases touting record sales of the Kindle appear to be generating some pushback from Wall Street. This week's tech tip will answer the question, do you know the IP address of your Kindle? How to get the 611 on that, thanks to a tip from Kevin Warner. In content, I will take a look at a book that takes a very long view of the ebook phenomenon. You can subscribe to this podcast at the iTunes and Zune stores or by going to the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. With that, let's turn to the news. Eric Engelman of TechFlash has an item dated December 31st noting that Amazon's recent string of press releases touting strong sales for the Kindle without including any numbers, quote, is starting to get on Wall Street's nerves. He cites a Reuters analysis piece which stated that, quote, investor patience with the lack of details has begun to wear thin. The Reuters piece quotes Forrester Research's James McQuivey, who is handling the ebook area while Sarah Rotman Epps is on maternity leave, with this. As long as Amazon continues to have the right margins and the right profit numbers at the end of every quarter, they can probably get away with that, meaning not putting out actual information about sales. But McQuivey added that if the Kindle streak goes cold and Amazon continues to keep investors in the dark, they, investors, could turn on the stock. This sounds to me like possibly meaningful pushback from analysts who probably matter at least to Amazon's investor relations department, so I wouldn't be surprised if we see fewer of these kinds of puffy press releases coming out of the company in the coming months. I don't doubt that there were more Kindle volumes sold on Christmas Day than paper volumes, and that records were set during December, but I can see why an analyst really trying to get a handle on the Kindle phenomenon from the point of view of information for investors could feel a little frustrated having to pass these things along without really having a look at any of the underlying numbers. And it's pretty clear that Amazon has no intention of releasing that kind of information anytime soon. But the main fact that's pretty obvious is that the Kindle is selling like crazy, and whether Amazon releases more hard data or not, that's what's changing everything. This week's tech tip comes as a result of an email I received from Kevin Warner. He wrote, while I was talking to Amazon support, the technician asked me to delve into the settings of my Kindle. As someone who likes to consider himself a techie, I found this rather interesting. Not sure if you have covered this tip or not. If you hit the menu button and use the five-way controller to enter the settings screen, you can type 611 using the number keys, and your Kindle 2 will display one of four pages of very technical information, including things like your Kindle's IP address and lots of other things. Not actually useful, but interesting, and it makes you feel smart to be able to tell people your Kindle's IP address. Well, this tech tip brings me way deeper into the tech weeds of the Kindle than I should venture without a chaperone, but I have been playing around with it nonetheless. The first thing I noticed is that on my Kindle 2, there were only three pages of unintelligible information, not the four that Kevin mentioned. At first I thought that might be because I've installed a couple of hacks on my Kindle, so I checked my wife's, which is hack-free, same three pages. Then I checked my friend Tom's Kindle, which is a Kindle Global Wireless latest generation model. And I have a feeling that that's probably what Kevin was doing his on as well. Because sure enough, there were four pages of tech information, including the IP address, which I just learned from Wikipedia is a numerical label assigned to a device participating in a computer network using the Internet Protocol, thus IP, for communication among its nodes. The Kindle Global latest generation 611 information is a lot more fun to watch than the one that's available on my Kindle 2 because the details keep changing as you look at the screen. It's as if you're looking at the Kindle's heart monitor. The 611 on my Kindle 2 made a few changes as I watched it in the RF mode, which changed from three sleep mode to something else and back. But one thing the Kindle 2 611 information has that the Global didn't, unless I wasn't able to read some of the code way on the fourth page, it looks like my Kindle 2 has latitude and longitude information, but the Global version didn't. I'm not sure why this 611 information fascinates me so much. It may be because my Kindle normally seems to be such a simple device. It goes to the next page of what I'm reading or the previous. It's simple enough to really read with. So these pages of incomprehensible to me technical information remind me that this is indeed a very sophisticated piece of technology that is able to present such a friendly interface to a guy who knows a lot more about poetry than about programming. I'd sort of known about 611 information pages before, but I want to thank Kevin Warner for nudging me toward the fun of spending some time with its mysteries today. My wife Darlene has been doing something with her Kindle that I have never tried, and that's sharing books. One of her Kindle partners is her sister Deborah, who was visiting us in Cambridge over the Christmas holiday. I sat down with them in the living room the night before we left Boston for Denver, and in Deb's case, Omaha, to talk about the ins and outs of sharing on a Kindle. Darlene has ended up adopting Kindle technology just slightly less early than I do, so she had a Kindle 1 at the time when we bought her a Kindle 2. We'll pick up the conversation with Darlene's realization that led to her sharing books with Deb and then later with our friend Tom in Casper, Wyoming.
I realized that all of my archives was on Kindle 1 and Kindle 2, and so someone else could take my Kindle 1 and if they liked to read the same kind of books that I did, they would have all of them right there available to them. As long as they didn't want to purchase a book, it seemed like it would work really well. So, of course, I thought of my wonderful sister. And, you know, we read some of the same things. And then I have a friend who also reads some of the same things that I read. And so we took your old Kindle and
We deregistered it from my account and put it onto your account.
Right. So then right. I had three Kindles on my account and gave it to him to read. And then the one that my sister has, when she is going to be busy and she knows she's not going to read on it, she gives it to my brother, who also likes to read murder mysteries. And then we're just sort of...
So when you do that, does he just read the same set of books from your archive? Or?
Well, I guess he would just go through my archives and pick and see which ones appeal to him. Now, didn't we... We purchased one for his birthday and gave him the Kindle, and then we... I think we put the latest Baldacci or Patterson or something on it. Something we knew he wanted to read.
Oh, that you put on your Kindles that he was using? Or?
Yeah, and I think part of it was... I think we're kind of interested in purchasing one, and I think that he was thinking about buying one for his wife and, you know, kind of wanted to see how it worked. They had gotten one for their daughter, but she liked hers so well that she wouldn't share it with the parents, so the parents were still a little bit in the dark in terms of, you know, whether they would really use it a lot. But I think he's enjoyed it, and he does use it. It's been fun using Darlene's old Kindle because I do like all murder mysteries and things like that, and that's, you know, she had a huge collection of them, so that was really nice. And that's the other thing that's kind of nice about being able to share them, because they're not like a traditional book where you buy a traditional book and then you can give it to the next person to read, which is what Darlene and I used to do before they invented Kindles. So this is kind of a way for us still to be able to share our books back and forth. I guess if there is a disadvantage, the disadvantage is that it's all on one account. So to the extent that it's Darlene's account, then if Rod and I have a specific book we want to read, then we have to contact her and have her purchase it so that we can bring it up on our Kindles.
But we did that. Remember, you needed that book for class, and it just worked like a charm.
It works great.
So, I mean, if people wanted to share an account, that's the advantage of it. And, you know, just to put in a plug for the Kindle, I understand that you can't do that on the Nook. And to me, it's a huge thing. I don't feel so guilty purchasing books if I know that other people are going to use them also.
Maybe I shouldn't be letting the cat out of the bag here, but you, Deb, you could be buying a book straight from your Kindle, and it would get charged to Darlene's credit card.
Right.
Have you done that, or
No?
And then just reimbursed her, or
I usually give her the courtesy call,
and you let her actually make
and let her actually order it. But no, I do realize that, and that can be a disadvantage. I mean, because if you're going to share, you have to share your account with someone that you. Yeah, so comfortable is not going to take advantage of you or abuse your account. But, you know, as long as you're comfortable with that, then I knew I could purchase directly off Darlene's account.
Yeah, I see. So you're doing that just as a courtesy so she doesn't think she has a runaway Kindle
out
there.
That's right.
Whoa, what are all these books happening for?
But it would come up on my email, so I would quickly know that, oh, wait, I didn't purchase that.
Well, that's true, because whenever there's a purchase, you get an email.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a way to keep track of it.
Since you've had her Kindle, do you just go into the archives from time to time and see what's available that you might be interested in and download it to the Kindle? Or do you do that from your computer, sort of working with Deb? How do you actually get things on Deb's computer?
Well, doesn't it automatically come
Kindle?
On?
Well, with Tom, I went through my archives and I brought up all the books that I thought that he would be interested in. There are a lot of books, and only I know which ones, you know, he would like more than others, unless it's an author we both have read and we know we're going to like.
Right.
And so there was a way to go on my computer and bring those up and send them to his Kindle.
Right.
So they weren't in the archives. But I understand that Deb or Tom could go back into my archives and just bring a book forward, couldn't they? I'm not sure you know how to do that, Deb, but you could.
Yeah, you could do that from the Kindle. In other words, if you scroll from your home page all the way back, the last item says archives on the Kindle.
Oh.
And if you go in there from the Kindle, you could just go through, and if you saw anything that was interesting, you would just hit download to your Kindle and it would go over. And there's no extra charge because Darlene's already bought it.
Right. Well, yeah. I'm still on the first 100 books, so
oh.
I have a way to go.
How many do you have in your archive?
Oh, I don't think. I think there's like.
I think you've got 300 or something.
No, I don't think so. It's like it only says like 160 or 100 and some. I took a whole bunch off once. I was so excited when you could delete books permanently because stuff that I just really didn't like. Or I didn't want other people to have it, to share it. I thought these aren't books that I would recommend. I just got rid of them.
Yeah,
and
that was nice.
I pared down a lot of them. Yeah, so now I feel like the books that are there are books that are the kind of books I would share with someone and say, yeah, this is a book I read and I like it. And I'm happy to share it with you. Instead of saying this, you know, be careful of this book, and this book. They're duds.
You can just delete them from the archive.
Right, it's perfect.
And you're the only one that can delete from the archive because you have to be on your computer to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So you enter your Amazon username and password, and then you go to Manage My Kindle, and then you can just individually take items out of your archive.
You know, the other thing is if you had, I don't know how many books you can put on an account, maybe we think 5 or 6, but if you had 5 or 6 people on one account and they were all, it's like a book club. You could all be reading the same book and talk about it, and you could all read it at the same time. It's not like some of the e-readers where you, if you loan a book, then you can't be reading it at the same time and then it goes for so long and comes back or whatever. That's pretty neat if you think about it.
I guess you'd only be able to have, you know, 5 or 6 people in the club, but it would definitely be terrific to be able to all be reading at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
The loan program on the Nook, which got a lot of play, was interesting, but if I loan a book to somebody else on their Nook, it leaves my Nook, it goes to their Nook for 2 weeks, and then it comes back. Mm-hmm. Although the one I loaned to Brent Evans, I think it's been 2 weeks and it hasn't come back yet. So, Brent, give me my book back.
Maybe it's lost. Does the person have to send it back?
He's a pretty technical guy. He might have been able to hack it out so that it never came back. But it appears like it's just one of the many shakedown cruise problems that the Nook is having.
But Len, is he supposed to send it back to you, does it come back automatically?
I think it just comes back automatically. The way it was described. Yeah. So, and he had a couple of weeks to read it. One thing that was fun is when you were sending books to Tom, he's in Wyoming, mm-hmm. and he's on a Kindle One, so there wasn't WhisperNet in Casper, Wyoming. But you were still able to download books from your archive to Tom's Kindle, and then he connected via the internet and his computer to get them on the Kindle.
Right, he tapped into my account on his computer, and then we were able to bring him in that way.
Yeah, it wasn't quite so handy. If he'd been on the WhisperNet, you would have just been able to download them wirelessly to his Kindle.
But it was still pretty darn slick.
Yeah.
After you showed us the first time, it got
now, faster. So you've probably got two or three other sort of Kindle partners that you could have, because you're just doing Tom and Deb at this point.
I know, isn't that exciting? My friend in Africa, Linda, I should get her on one of these before she leaves and send her over with my archives.
Yeah.
She'd have all those books to read.
Yeah.
Well, I'll see her next week. I'll have to.
Well, how come you and I aren't on an account sharing books?
We don't read the same things.
Have we ever read the same book?
I don't think you believe in novels, so it would be...
I read novels. I'm reading Stephen King. How come you're not reading Stephen King?
Too scary.
It is pretty scary.
Too grim. I don't,
and the Teddy Kennedy memoir.
I would read that in a heartbeat. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think you enjoy that.
There's some things we would read the same, but I mean, for the most part, I read a lot more than you do, and I read more for entertainment than you do. You read for knowledge, I read for fun.
You know, and the other thing I think that is a drawback to sharing, say, between spouses or whatever, really with anyone, is that you can't make folders or other ways to organize the archive. It's just this whole long list of books. But if you could go in there and say, all right, in the archive, these are Len's books, and these are Darlene's books, mm-hmm. these are Deb's books, that would really make it even more handy to share an account like that.
It really would. You know, I did find out in the archives that I could organize things by authors, and that helps some, because then you could go through and, for example, if it's, I don't know why I always think of Baldacci, but, you know, if it's like Patterson or Baldacci or somebody like that, there'll be a whole bunch of them. There's less choices. You're choosing what author that you want, and then when you get that determined, then you're choosing, well, which one of those do you want. Anyway, it makes it, it's sort of like folders in an odd sort of way, but you're right. If you could...
Well, the last time you complained about something, it was that you couldn't delete from the archives, mm-hmm. and then about a month later, they fixed that.
It seemed like a day later, so that was so great. Okay, so I'd like to complain about the folders thing, and in a month, maybe I'll see folders. Well, that would be huge.
You're talking about folders in the archive. The other thing which people really have been complaining about ever since the Kindle came out is that on the Kindle itself, if you've got pages and pages of books, there's no way to organize. I mean, you can see the books versus the mm-hmm. subscriptions and by author and some things, but you can't say, here's all my mystery books, here's all my novels. But
I think that if they ever come up with the folders, you'll get them in the archives on the end, in the main part of the, what is it called, the main?
Well, the home screen is what I call it.
Right, but then, mm-hmm.
Well, have you used it enough so that you, Deb, that you prefer reading on the Kindle versus paper, or are you sort of agnostic and can read either way?
Well, I can read either way. I took some classes this last semester, and I had a novel that I needed to read for a class, and so I got that on the Kindle to see how it would work having a book to use for class. Because I'm not real savvy with the Kindle, it was difficult for me. I mean, it was easy to read, but then when I wanted to go back, if I was in class and we were discussing a certain page or a certain chapter, or I wanted to go back and review something, I just found myself kind of wishing that I had a hard copy. So if I have something that I have to study or that I have to maybe read some parts of it more than once, at this point I'd rather have just a paper book. Mm-hmm. But as far as, you know, taking it on the planes, traveling with it and stuff. I enjoy having the Kindle, and I like being able to read something without other people necessarily being able to see what I'm reading. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people interrupt you and want to have conversations about the book and stuff, and so it just kind of gives you that anonymity to sit and read and not be disturbed by other people. But no, I think it's great, and I like the big print. I like the fact that you can change the print on it. That's really huge.
That's big.
And also for me, because I work with people that experience disabilities, the talking aspects of these new books and this new technology that's coming out is, you know, I mean, that just opens up a whole new avenue. I just find that really exciting.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be even better. They've announced that sometime in the coming year, maybe in the half year, they'll actually be able to hear the controls so that a blind person will be able to tell, you know, where the cursor is and actually run the Kindle as well as have the Kindle read to them. Because up to this point, in fact, the National Federation for the Blind has been very militant in saying the Kindle is flawed because blind people can't actually operate it.
But that's
supposedly going to be fixed in the coming 6 months or so. Do you have people, when you're on the plane, stop and ask you about the Kindle?
Oh, yes. Or what is it? Sometimes it's what is it? Or, oh, yeah, people always want to know how long you've had it. And
yeah.
Do you enjoy it? And oh, yeah, there's a lot. That's true. People do certainly want to talk about the Kindle.
But they're not so much talking about whatever you happen to be reading because they can't really tell.
Right. Yeah. But they can still interrupt you.
So that was 3 days ago, and today Tom happens to be visiting us here in Denver with his wife, Tish. So this gave me a chance to visit with the third person who is sharing Darlene's Amazon account.
When I had a new Kindle, we loaned my old Kindle to you.
The original one.
Right. And then we hooked it to Darlene's account.
Correct.
Because you and she read a lot of the same kinds of books.
Love the same authors.
Yep. And it was interesting because it gave you a chance to try the Kindle. And at what point did you decide that you liked it enough so then Tish ended up getting one for your birthday?
Oh, just almost every time I read it. And I do a lot of reading in the evening when I'm in bed. And sometimes I fall asleep. Well, I don't lose my page. The Kindle just turns off. And then when I want to reread it, I just turn it back on. And it's that simple. It's a lot easier than a book.
So you took to it pretty quickly.
Absolutely. It was amazing. On the new one, I like only the new one I like because it doesn't advance the page. If you happen to touch the edge, you have to touch the inside. And that's going to be a big difference. That was the only problem I had with it.
That's right. A lot of people had that same problem that they inadvertently were switching the pages forward.
And then how easy it was with you showing me how to move everything from the old Kindle to the new one, and even the book that I was reading.
Yeah, we found exactly where you were, and so now you're back to that same spot.
Right.
Darlene was in Cambridge, and you were in Casper, Wyoming, and yet we were still able to get you a lot of books.
And with that original one, we didn't have the reception there, so I couldn't get on and order a book. I had to go through a hard line, hook up the computer and do it. This new one, it absolutely is amazing. I really, really enjoy it.
Yeah, and you're going to have the wireless, there's a bigger area, so I'm pretty sure Casper, you'll be able to pick it up there.
Already have. Know that it works easily.
Did they surprise you with the new Kindle on your birthday?
Oh, yeah, they did. And because I had to open that first because my son had bought me the little night light that you can slide into the book holder. And so I got the big book first and then the light last. If I'd gotten the light, I'd have gone, oh, something's going on.
But I understand you and Tish haven't quite figured out whether the light is working.
I have figured out that it works just fine. She's trying to sleep and she thinks it's too light. And I'm going, oh my, just close your eyes. It goes out.
So the technology doesn't mean that these things are without their problems.
No, it's not, and it's nothing inherent to the light itself. It has to do with my partner.
Well, good luck with that. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
I want to thank Darlene, Deb, and Tom for appearing on the show this week. At this point, we do have an extended Kindle family, or at least Darlene does, and I think that's probably going to become more and more common as the Kindle's penetration among serious readers continues its relentless advance. One point I want to clarify relates to Tom's comment about switching content from the Kindle One that he was using to his new Kindle Global. There may be a more elegant way to do it, but here's how I did it. I logged into Darlene's Amazon account and went to the Manage Your Kindle area, then scrolled down to the Your Orders section, which lists all of the books that she has bought from Amazon and retained in her archive. I asked Tom to give me the title of each item on the Kindle One that he wanted transferred to his new Kindle Global latest generation. I searched for each item and then chose Deliver to his new Kindle. Another fun thing that I did in playing around with Tom's new Kindle and Darlene's Amazon account is I went to the top section titled Your Kindle or Kindles, apostrophe S, where his new one appeared as Darlene's Fifth Kindle, which was the automatic name given to it when she used her account to buy the Kindle to make sure it was a surprise for his birthday. On my computer, I chose Edit Info and changed the Kindle name to Tom's New Kindle. I told him to watch the top of his home screen, and sure enough, in a few minutes, it magically changed its name. Another note, since I wasn't sure if you can share an account on 5 or 6 Kindle devices, I'd heard both, including iPhones or Kindle for PC, I called Amazon's Kindle support today for clarification. You'll be glad to know that I waited less than a couple of minutes to talk with someone, and she really knew her stuff. She explained that publishers can opt for different numbers of devices for their titles, but that it's generally 5 or 6 maximum. If you're using the Kindle iPhone app or Kindle for PC, and I hope soon Kindle for Macintosh and Kindle for BlackBerry, plus your own Kindle, that means you only have 2 or 3 additional Kindles that you can register for your Amazon account. Turning now to content, Alan McDermid in Bardstown, Kentucky, sent this suggestion to me, quote, I am 66% into Steve Jordan's latest DRM-free, digital rights management-free book, Why Is This Hill So Steep? And I would recommend it to you and your listeners. It sheds light on why we have a tower of e-babble, why we have DRM, and why it has been such a long ride from inception of e-books to where we are now. For people who like sci-fi, his other books are also good and very reasonably priced at stevejordanbooks.com. Although they are not all sci-fi, I thoroughly enjoyed them and have read them all. Well, I took Al's advice and I bought Steve Jordan's book. I am only about 6% into it, but that's far enough to know that I'm going to enjoy reading it slowly, and I know that I'm going to learn lots that's going to be helpful in following ebooks and the Kindle in the future. Here's just a sample. It tells you the quality of his writing and the depth of his curiosity about his topic, ebooks. Ebooks are like distilled literature. I love that phrase. Ebooks are like distilled literature. Text reduced to its essential nature. It is not only capable of being read, it is free from physical constraints and therefore malleable, flexible. Its final format can be altered to fit the user's needs. Fonts can be altered to styles, sizes, and even colors that are easier on the eye. Paragraphs can be massaged to allow comfortable spaces between words and lines, and backgrounds can be adjusted for contrast as desired. Some ebook applications can read text aloud, and others can translate the text to other languages. None of these things can be matched by printed text presentation methods. Ebooks represent no less than the natural evolution of literature to a new and better medium, the natural progression of text from clay to stone to hide to linen to paper to electrons. That's from locations 181 through 197 in the Kindle version of the book. It looks as if it's going to be a very good read, and when I'm done, I will no doubt see if I can arrange to interview Steve Jordan here on the podcast. I'll have the link to purchase it. It costs $4 in non-DRM'd Mobi format that shows up as .prc when you load it onto your Kindle's documents folder. Time now for your comments. From Greg Montague, I'm not sure if you've mentioned this before, but the 2.3 update adds a new game with Minesweeper and GoMuku. So check that out. You go to Alt-Shift-M from the home screen on your Kindle 2 if you've done the update, and you'll be able to play those two games. Kevin Warner, who had given us the 611 tech tip. Also emailed earlier this month as follows. I am a college lecturer here in Australia, and one of the classes I teach is adult literacy and numeracy class. I often let students read from my Kindle, which they love. The text-to-speech feature is fantastic, as some of the students have incredibly poor reading skills. However, there is one thing that would make it even better, an option to have the Kindle highlight the word being spoken. Do any of your other listeners use their Kindles in their teaching? I love the interview with the nursing student who used his Kindle while away on a foreign field trip. It was fascinating to hear how students can use the Kindle in their studies. But it would be great to hear how other educators are using their Kindles in the classroom. Since writing that email, Kevin heard a mention on the podcast of Will Delamater's excellent edukindle.com blog, which is a gathering place and really great source for information for educators who are using the Kindle. So I think he's got some more information there than when he wrote the message. He did have another question in his email, which so far is unanswered, as follows. Since updating the firmware to 2.3, Kevin wrote, my WhisperNet reception has dropped. Prior to the update, I had full reception, 5 bars both at home and at my office. Now, after the update, I'm lucky to get 2 bars, and it fluctuates between 2, 1, and 0 bars, even when the Kindle is left sitting on my desk. I've contacted Amazon support, and they are researching the issue, as they had not had any other reports of this, and I am waiting to hear back from them. Just thought you might like to hear about a possible update problem. I knew Kevin was in Australia, but I asked him for a little further information. He wrote back, I'm in Western Australia in a small town just outside the city, in quotes, of Bunbury. I put city in quotes, he said, as a true city should have a cathedral, and the Bunbury Cathedral was demolished in a tornado a few years ago. He continues, it is a strange problem with the WhisperNet. I was wondering if it might be just a coincidence that it became problematic after the update. You probably know more about the Kindle than anyone else, so if you haven't heard of this problem, then it's probably not a problem with the update. I'm hoping that Amazon will get back to me soon with a possible answer. It's very annoying, as one of the great advantages of the Kindle is the WhisperNet. Although I still love reading on it, in fact, I don't think I've picked up a paper book for pleasure since getting my Kindle. I think you are right about reading faster on the Kindle, and I definitely seem to remember more of what I read. That's great information from Australia. I love hearing from overseas people who are getting to learn the Kindle. Patrick Scott emailed me a link to a brilliant online publication, which I hadn't heard about before, called Flip. That's F-L-Y-P. Kind of really jazzy text and graphics and video and all sorts of stuff. And this one was from May of 2009, and it included an insightful interview with Jeff Bezos. I especially liked his answer to this question. The question was, what is special about the Kindle? Here's what Bezos had to say.
For, you know, more than 10 years, we worked on selling kind of traditional electronic books that we would sell the electronic book and you would read it on your laptop, and nobody came. The reason is, for long form reading, you're going to read a novel or you're going to read a 300-page nonfiction book, it's no fun to read for that period of time on a laptop. The backlit display, it's like reading while somebody is shining a flashlight in your eyes. You get eye strain, the laptop gets hot, your hands sweat. There's all kinds of things. The form factor is totally wrong. It's too heavy. There are a bunch of things that had to come together. But, you know, when people see this electronic display for the first time, this electronic paper display on Kindle, they do a double take. If you think of, you know, long form storytelling, what you're really talking about is narrative. And narrative, you know, as opposed to the physical book, the container that is the book, long form storytelling, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, is really more about the human brain. So that is going to, I can guarantee you that that is going to continue.
If you have time, I urge you to watch the video version of this, which I'll have a link to in the show notes. You'll be able to see it by flipping to page 12 of the article in Flip, and the title of that article is, "And the Word Was Kindle." It's hard for me to question the sincerity of Bezos when I watch and listen to him speak this way about his creation. And if you from time to time find yourself wobbling in your embrace of the Kindle, maybe questioning your own delight in it because of what sometimes seems to be a torrent of second-guessing and often ill-informed blathering of those touting the imminent arrival of one Kindle killer or another, then I think you'll enjoy doing yourself the favor of watching Bezos respond to all six of the questions posed by Jeffrey M. O'Brien for the Flip piece. I have to say, though, ironically, Flip is a good example of a new genre publication that actually would fare poorly on the current Kindle compared with a computer screen or maybe with the imminent Apple tablet. The graphics are very clever and animated. The opening shows a cross-legged Bezos descending onto a top of a stack of traditional books holding a Kindle to the tune of some bold New Agey music. It's pretty neat, and I really enjoyed having a chance to check it out, so thank you to Patrick Scott for the link. Jonathan Bloom emailed, "I found an error in a book that I published through Amazon's DTP, that's Digital Text Platform Program. The update is live, but only new readers will get my update. I notified Amazon, and their response is working on it. It surprises me that after 2 to 3 years, this is still an issue. I submitted this to you in case anyone else has issues like this. I trust Amazon will fix this soon, just makes it hard if you mess up. I thought the whole part of digital was that you could update your book. I was going to market new editions to my book as an incentive to go digital rather than paperback. Please, Amazon, fix this." Well, I remember this issue from nearly a year ago when I think David Emberson was trying to get updates of his Kindle Cookbook series to flow easily to purchasers, or it might have been Jim Cheshire I'm thinking about, whose latest Kindle guide is titled Using Kindle, A Complete Guide to Amazon's Revolutionary Wireless Reading Devices. In any event, it sounds like this is still an issue, but when it gets fixed, it's going to be a fantastic leap forward for the Kindle as a platform, not only for DTP authors, but also for mainstream publishers. Jim Jones emailed from Omaha, "Your interview with David Weinberger in TKC episode 71 piqued my curiosity, so I listened to his conversation with Cory Doctorow. Their discussion about copyright and ownership issues brought to mind some thoughts I've had about the general subject. For one, while I think the dichotomy sometimes expressed about paper texts versus electronic versions is a false choice, for me it does raise some things to consider. I've heard some individuals express the point of view that, quote, books are the author's thoughts and words expressed in sentences. My take is that those things are the story, and the book is the vessel that contains them. The relevance for me relates to the conversation we had about the potential emotional connection of people to e-readers. I think a strong case can be made that the tactile and olfactory sensations associated with, say, the family Bible used for one's wedding ceremony, or the ragged copy of Love Story being read just before breaking up with your eighth grade girlfriend, are key to, or at least strong contributors to, the psychological and physiological reactions experienced and recalled about them. I'm not so sure the same can be said when those scriptural verses and Siegel's prose are displayed uniformly in 16-level grayscale e-ink. It would certainly make for an interesting comparative study. Following that line of thought made me muse about how a transition from paper to e-text might affect not just commerce, but also family and social culture. So if the heirloom family Bible was in electronic format, could it be bequeathed to an heir in a will? If content becomes essentially non-differentiated, will the concepts of heirlooms and collectibles lose their meaning as we've come to know them? I'm sure these thoughts, questions aren't unique to me, but they remind me to stop and consider what a truly amazing time we live in with regard to technological advances, and make me feel an affinity with my deceased father, who was born before the invention of television. May we live in interesting times, eh? Well, Jim Jones is a reliable source to me of original thinking about the Kindle and ebooks, especially in relation to education. I particularly like his reference in this message to tactile and olfactory sensations related to reading. Nicely put. James Sullivan and Kathy emailed me that they've been having problems since upgrading to 2.3, the firmware. James was having a problem with updates to his Amazon Daily blog, and Kathy was having trouble just because it didn't show up on the wireless over the WhisperNet, and she didn't want to. She says, "I have never plugged my Kindle into the computer out of fear I might do something wrong," so she's still waiting. Kathy also had an interesting take on the advent of the Nook, and she writes as follows. I am a bit of an oddity in that I am a baby boomer, 1950, female with a love of the latest tech gadgets. I was in line on the first day the iPod Touch was released, etc. I have two adult sons, and I am usually ahead of them on the gadget curve. To be fair, I have the time to read blogs and listen to podcasts like yours while they are that really busy time of life, a fifth-year doctoral student and an anesthesiologist. And so, she continues, I love my Kindle. I have demonstrated it to them and shared my bubbling enthusiasm during many a phone call. They both live in cities several hours away from me, living the city life of metros, coffee shops, and bookstores. Neither one of them have jumped on the ebook bandwagon, basically telling me they just don't get it and prefer paper books. So, you guessed it, I decided that for Christmas this year, we would give them each an e-reader. Making the decision on which e-reader to get for them has been quite a ride. And that brings me back to the conversation to your conversation this week. Bottom line, I chose the Nook for the two of them. At 27 and 33, I made the choice primarily on the coolness factor, the lending option, EPUB, and the in-store browsing. As much as I love my Kindle, I was concerned that it would have the connotation of old for them. So then she goes on to tell that it was sort of a breathtaking event to see if it would actually arrive on Christmas Eve, and it did, so they were able to get the Kindles in time, and UPS drove up at around 2 on Christmas Eve, good for B&N to Barnes & Noble to get it there in time. Kathy continues, both guys were delighted, although they are totally new to e-readers. Both are very interested in using the reader for professional reading. One son stayed here for a few extra days after Christmas, so I will relate his experiences. He was unable to download anything on Christmas Day. Apparently, Barnes & Noble was overwhelmed. That was disappointing, but it resolved the next day. Major issue with holding places. After doing some reading, the Nook is forgetting where my son left off. A quick look on the internet showed me that this problem is a huge one and needs to be fixed promptly. My son used Calibre to load a professional article and was pleased with the result, not as pleased with PDF. The Nook also froze and crashed on him several times. In my mind, she continues, as each issue occurred, I was quietly shouting, "My Kindle handles bookmarks perfectly. My Kindle downloads easily. My Kindle doesn't crash." But this son, the fifth-year grad student, feels the Nook was the proper choice for him. Android and a few other reasons, coolness included. He is confident that these bookmarking crashing issues will be corrected in updates soon. I sure hope he's right. So now we are officially a mixed-breed family. Husband and I have Kindles. Adult children have Nooks. This is something you don't hear when I'm recording in Cambridge, my great-grandfather's chiming clock. Thanks, everyone, for those comments. If you've heard something you'd like to join the conversation about, please do. You can leave an audio comment for me at 206-666-2713. You can email me at podchronicles@gmail.com or leave a comment on the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. I want to thank Jim the English Major and Texas Runner for leaving the two most recent reviews of the podcast at the iTunes store. My listener statistics show that 74% of you download this podcast using iTunes, so reviews there are a very helpful way to spread word to new listeners. I have widgets at thekindlechronicles.com that point to Amazon's site, so please feel free to begin your own retail adventure there, as it will help out the podcast with associate fees, and you'll still be buying things at Amazon at the exact same prices. Next week, Darlene and I will travel to Las Vegas for the International Consumer Electronics Show, CES. Amazon will not have a booth there, but there will be a swarm of would-be Kindle killers trying to create buzz, including the plastic Logic Q, which is supposedly going to be making its long-delayed debut, and we'll be there. It would be a good week for Ian Fried and company to drop some kind of big new Kindle Advance, so I will be ready to let you know about it if that happens. For myself, I'd especially love news that the Kindle is going to be able to read EPUB documents, and maybe for extra credit that Amazon is cut a deal with Overdrive.com so that we can borrow ebooks from public libraries. That's a pretty neat thing that I can do on the Nook that we can't do on the Kindle. Darlene received an email from CES saying that her press credentials have been approved, but so far the spiffy name tag has not arrived here in Denver, but I trust that'll be here before we head off to Las Vegas. I plan to set her to work commenting on what we will see on the expo floor and elsewhere, but we will take some time to enjoy our fancy digs at the Venetian Hotel as well. If you'd like to be included in the Kindled Spirits email alert list, please drop me an email at podchronicles@gmail.com. I send everyone on that list an email the moment I've uploaded a new episode, as well as news that breaks that might be of interest. Music for my podcast is Ramonk by Eval Monegat on the Variations in Time, a Jazz Perspective CD by Public Transit Recording, courtesy of IODA PromoNet. This is Len Edgerly from downtown Denver for the Kindle Chronicles. As this decade comes to an end, I wish you all the best for the new year. And isn't it pretty amazing to think about peering ahead and wondering how we will all be reading at the end of 2019? I feel fortunate to have you along for the ride, and I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to my podcast. Have a great day and a terrific new decade. Bye.